Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. The NFL Draft is next week, and Mina and her expert guests have you covered for it all. That's The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Listen where you are listening to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Man, these playoff games got me swinging like a pendulum. I thought the Lakers was something special, and they have shown to us that they are not.
Well, first, I want to talk about this. We also got a little NFL stuff to get to along with the NBA playoffs, but I got to get back into the playoff nap habit, man. Like, I realized that I had not been, like, when I used to do morning radio, that was the thing. I had to get the playoff nap because that was the show. We were a basketball show, very heavy. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been getting them playoff naps in. And, like, even Minnesota, Denver on Wednesday night, I'm like, no, I got to stick with this. Like, can we get a blowout? I'm waiting for the Snowfall series finale to come on. And I'm looking at the Lakers and the Grizzle, and I'm like, yo, man, somebody do this definitively. Like, luckily they got done just in time, but I got to make a lot of accommodations in my lifestyle in order to make this happen.
I've been watching all the games except for the Nuggets games because I looked at that series before it started and was like, this one, I mean, I can watch this the day after. I can watch the highlights. This ain't going to be a big talker. Like, this one is over before it started with Rudy doing shoulder punches before they even get into the series. Like, I've been proven right every time. I look up the next morning like, yep, you made a good call.
Well, I will say this. Game two was good. Of course, the thought from game two for me after coming out of it is, once again, everybody, what I keep trying to tell y'all about him. Mm-hmm. What I keep trying to tell y'all about tall man. Yes, what do I keep trying to tell y'all about tall man? Don't nobody want to hear me. They think I got some sort of beef, and I'm just asking. Has it been long enough since, you know, all the hardship and turmoil for us to discuss the fact that Karl Towns had 5 turnovers and 3 made field goals? Are we allowed to talk about he had 5 fouls and 3 made field goals? Is it okay to bring this up at this point? Because say what you want, but Rudy put up 19.
Yeah, and that ain't even what Rudy there for. Rudy there to protect the rim and to make sure that Karl don't have to be big man on defense. Essentially, that's why he's there. And dog, he ain't doing it.
Everybody was doing their job. Ant-Man was unreal. Mm-hmm. And then Tall Man just didn't have it for you. Oh, and Jamal Murray scored 40. And I would like to note, because I don't want to be the guy where you feel like you ain't giving credit to the right person. And a lot of that 40 certainly had to do with Jamal Murray. And Jamal Murray's ability to score 40 is why they're a viable contender to win the West. But that also happens because he's running the 2-man game with that man. And that makes it really hard for you to decide what it is that you're going to do. Because what you really don't want is Jokic to get the ball on that roll. Because either somebody getting a bucket once he got that.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that Jokic is the first priority for any defense. And it's hard when the first priority as far as stopping is also a great passer. And that's probably what he does. Not probably. That is what he does best. Yes. Yeah. And to have, of course, like I think even Jamal Murray would obviously not dispute the fact that he's made better by Nikola Jokic. Like Jamal Murray is not for anybody's. He's not the number one guy on any like real contender. I think even he would believe that.
Nah, but right there, it's perfect. It's perfect. Because I don't think Jamal Murray is as good as other people do. But I also appreciate the value of somebody who could do what he does in the playoffs. Yeah. Like, I think Trae Young's the most overrated player in the NBA. I also recognize that having a Trae Young can be the thing that puts you over, right? You just need him to do it more consistently than he probably can. But there are skills there that are like, hey, somebody got to come out here and take this shot.
The NBA thinks Trae Young is overrated too. Like, you ain't the only one. The players believe him to be overrated. Man, that's got to hurt.
You saw that athletic poll?
Yeah. Why they do that? I mean, I get it. It's entertaining. I appreciate it. I read it. But gosh, as if these guys, like, we talk about their mental health situation and all that and how social media is killing everybody. And they just like, man, you can't hide. We're going to go ask your friends which one of you guys we want to punch the most. We're going to ask your friends which one of you guys ain't as good as we think you are. Then we're going to print it. I guess not print it. We're going to post it for everybody to discuss on their shows the next day. Damn.
Yeah, just so you guys know, The Athletic does their player poll every year, and they have all the different questions, and one of them is the most overrated player in the NBA. And 31% was other, which is just some hodgepodge or whatever, right? But no, the guy who got the most votes individually was Trae Young, and it was around 14% of the respondents said Trae Young. But that wasn't the one that jumped out to me. The one that jumped out to me was 6.6 for Austin Reeves, which I could only take as hateration, holleration in this blackery. That was the only thing that I could see that as being like, hey, I actually now think Austin Reeves might be a little underrated. And I say that because you look at him and you're like, oh, okay, cool, white dude. You know what I mean? And you hear the stuff around. I mean, granted, the Lakers fans chanting MVP. That's not what we talk about here, right? But overall, nah, that dude is an NBA player. Jack, 6'6", with handles, jumper, and capable defense.
Yeah, I mean, I was probably underrating him too because, like, I assume that he's going to get that bonus. He's going to get a little bit of bump. And we talked about it before. There is going to be, like, a discount applied to any white player that comes in the NBA. There's a discount. We're going to assume, and the players themselves assume that he may not be that good, but once he show that he good, there's gonna be a boost.
Goes too far.
And I was like, oh yeah, y'all done probably gone too far, but the man showed up. At least in game one he showed up, and he's been good. He's been a difference maker for this team when LeBron was out. So yeah, calling him overrated, and it's so quick too, like, he just showed up this year. You can't be overrated already.
Yeah, like, I feel like he's properly rated right now. Yeah, actually, right? Like, there's perhaps an enthusiasm about his proper rating that exceeds that which is normally the case for a player on that level. But exactly. No, I think that right now he's about properly rated. But I want to talk about game two, because I guess we had this happen in that game and on the same night in Miami, Milwaukee, where the stars were out and the other dudes were like, all right, on my back. And by the way, it was two teams that have done significant time without their stars and played well in the regular season without those dudes. Now, with Ja, I think there is a fair question to ask about what exactly his contribution to winning is on a game-to-game basis. Like, his situational contribution, there's no question about that. But this is the second year in a row that they've done significant time without him playing, and it looked like they was all right. Mm-hmm. But you can say the same for the Bucks, and I don't have any questions about the impact of Giannis in winning, right? Maybe that's because they've been champions, that they could pick it up as they did. But you know what we're talking about from Memphis, Milwaukee. Officially in game two, Dylan Brooks finally got all LeBron's damn nerves. Lance Stevenson didn't even get all LeBron's nerves. This dude got on LeBron's nerves and then said, hey, he old, he 40. I wish I could have played against the Heat version of LeBron. And LeBron is going to try to give him that opportunity. Unfortunately, he can only do that for about 6-7 minutes.
Dylan Brooks said, I poke bears. Like, I couldn't help, like, since we've talked about this, I've been more conscious of, like, the characters in the sport and how few of them there are. And even when Dylan Brooks does things that I find annoying, I can't be annoyed by him because I do like the characters. Like, this is something that is fun and interesting. Them damn glasses. I don't know if them glasses is goofy or if that's what the kids is rocking these days. But either way, they were funny to me with your chain on, your chest out. When he had that perm and all, I mean, I guess it wasn't a perm. I don't know what he was doing. Like, all of it. It's just something. It's just something a little ancillary to give you, like, a taste of this character. And bouncing down the court after you hit a three in LeBron's face, that sucks for LeBron. It's fun for me.
Oh, it's fun for everybody. And I tell you this too, man. The Lakers need to pump that boy head up as much as they can. Yeah. They need to gas him up as much as possible. Because when it was getting late, and he made at least one of these. I think he made two of them. But they try to run out the clock, and it's 5 seconds left on the shot clock, and he's shooting 30-footers. That's what you want. You want him, like, late in that game, the Lakers would have been better off if he nailed every single one of those. Like, you need to get that dude believing that he is something that he simply is not. And that is your best chance out there. But when LeBron started going back and forth with him, it was like, oh, we gonna learn a lot. And the lead did shrink after that, but it wasn't because LeBron was just like, okay, I've had enough of your shenanigans. Because LeBron just can't do it like that no more. Yeah. And I felt like they wound up in the worst situation in that game that they can wind up with. Hey, Anthony Davis, we need you to be that guy tonight. This is a game that you're supposed to come in and put away. And he over there looking at LeBron like, what we gonna do, boss?
That got to be a real bad, bad feeling. I remember coming back from my ACL, and I'm not LeBron, and I'm sure everybody has experiences where, whether it's physical or mental or whatever, where you ain't quite the same. I was always like a fast guy. Like, that was my thing. And Torrey Smith, he went to Maryland, but he was on the Ravens with me. I lined up across from him, and I played across from him all the time, and he's incredibly fast, probably like 40 times faster than me. But I always like could stay with him. I came back like first practice from returning from my knee surgery, was guarding him in one-on-ones. He put it in another gear. I attempted to do so. It was like, nah. This ain't, you ain't who you were. You ain't who you were. And for LeBron James, where it's like at no point. I mean, I really have a hard time remembering any time where it felt like somebody just was like better than him. Like, it was always better teams, tough situations. And whenever there was like, I think the ESPN Daily did a thing on the LeBron antagonists from in the past, and he vanquished all of them pretty much. And we in
even
a position.
Even if it took a while.
Yeah, even if it took a while, Jason Terry. but we in a position right now where he reaching in that bag and he ain't got too many mushrooms left in there to power up on. He don't got no star. He don't got no stars or nothing. Ugh.
Yo, Star LeBron was the best version of LeBron. That is the best way to put it. LeBron would get that Mario star, and then he out there looking like Bo Jackson on Tecmo Bowl. People falling off of him. He doing whatever it is that need be done. And look, I keep saying this. What he's doing for his age is so incredible. Right? Yes. Like, you don't want to lose sight of that. But this team is built in such a way that doesn't allow for LeBron to be LeBron year 20. And Anthony Davis is supposed to be the guy that stops that. And he just still has too many games under those circumstances. Like, don't get it twisted. He had 5 blocks, right? Mm-hmm. He got 9 boards. Like, it's not like he didn't contribute anything at all, but they needed buckets.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get them buckets.
I said before the playoffs started that I thought that everybody was overhyping the Lakers, and I don't see this happening. And then all it took was one win and a Ja injury for me to be like, well, maybe.
Oh yeah, I was right there.
Well, maybe. But then after watching this game, it's the problems that we all expected. It's like LeBron can't be LeBron, and he can't be the LeBron that we conjure in our minds, except for every now and then. And even if he could for a series, he can't do it for 3 series in a row. And even if AD can be bubble AD or what he was in the first game or what he was at the end of the season for the course of the entire playoffs, if you don't got no like legit number two, and like Austin Reeves is your number two, if LeBron can't be it, that's a lot to ask. And AD couldn't even be a number one last night, it felt like.
Well, this is the other damning thing, too. The Lakers don't really have a lot of size inside.
Mm-mm.
Like, Anthony Davis is tall man, but they don't have any big man. And Xavier Tillman went 10 for 13 for 22 points, 13 rebounds. Like, the thing for the Lakers that I thought should have terrified them coming out of game one, even if they won it, is that they let the Grizzlies, who have been an inefficient offensive team all season long, put up a lot of buckets. This game, they clamped them, right? I want to say the Grizzlies shot something like 42 from the floor, 30 from three, something like that. And the Lakers still didn't win, right? Like, that's a little dicey. I'll tell you the other thing that I find to be interesting. I said coming into this postseason, one of the things where I think the NBA had erred to a degree, not erred, but it just wound up this way, that the seedings didn't seem to match our idea of who the best was or wasn't. Like, it just almost seemed like they randomly picked names out of a hat to decide who would play. But if you watch as this is gone, Denver's up 2-0. Sacramento's up 2-0. The Grizzlies just 1-1 without Ja Morant. 1-1 in both of the 4-5 series. Milwaukee just 1-1 without Giannis. And Miami shot way over their heads in game one, which means that's probably not going to be replicated. The Sixers are dominating the Nets. Mm-hmm. The Hawks are dominating the Celtics. Maybe these seeds. Yeah. You know, Maybe the come on, the Hawks ain't dominated nobody in the playoffs. Yeah. I'm 42 years old. I ain't seen it happen once. Not a damn time. They may have swept somebody. I'm here to tell you now, they didn't dominate them because they was wearing Hawks jerseys. DeMar Hamlin has been cleared to play football again, which kind of got me thinking about the idea of the counterintuitive notion of a doctor telling you playing football is okay.
that feels like an SNL sketch.
Yeah, you are cleared to go run through that brick wall. Knock yourself out.
Yeah, especially for the man who, like, was his heart stopped.
Yeah. Like, but I think that man looking up like, what else am I supposed to do, though?
No, I'm not judging him. I get it, I guess, from his perspective. I just have to recognize how selfish I am when it comes to the DeMar Hamlin story. Because everything about the DeMar Hamlin, if I'm being completely honest, it's about me. It's about how I feel watching them celebrate him in the playoffs. Like, this is not a celebratory story to me. This is not like, at least not for football. This is not for the NFL to celebrate. This is for DeMar Hamlin to celebrate, his family to celebrate, the emergency workers and training staff that saved him to celebrate. But it felt weird for me for the NFL and Tony Romo. Like, look at DeMar Hamlin throwing up the heart sign. It felt weird. And this all feels strange to me. And even when it happened, as much as like I felt for DeMar Hamlin, I'll be honest, I ain't think twice about DeMar Hamlin before that day. But that night I felt for him, but I was really feeling for me and feeling for everybody else that I know that was watching it. And I guess that's what's going through my mind again. It's like, yeah, it's his life. He can do what he wants with it. But for me, it's going to be hard. It's going to be real hard for me to watch DeMar Hamlin play football again. And God forbid he get like a concussion or something and he land on the field. I don't need that in my life.
Well, the problem is they're going to talk about him all the time.
Yeah.
Like, if they just threw him out there in a Buffalo Bills suit and it never came up. Like you said, I ain't never thought about that man. And I've watched a lot of Buffalo Bills games over the last few years. I ain't thought about that man one time. One of them Edmonds brothers, I know he played for them. Yep. You know, Von Miller, they had him for a stretch. Micah Hyde, that's the one that'd be annoying on Twitter. Is that him or is that the other one? I'm thinking about the dude in Cincinnati, Jordan something.
Poirier, yeah, he's there.
Oh, okay. It's one of them dudes in Buffalo, we don't agree on stuff, as I recall from his Twitter situation. But yeah,
me and Jordan Poirier had a Twitter chat too.
Yes, that guy. Yes, yes, that guy. So all these guys, even I could be like, yo, what's his name? DeMar Hamlin was not even in the what's his name category.
Yeah. He's a backup safety, and they had enough injuries that he was playing a lot. And like, I don't mean it as judgment. Like, it's fine. I was a backup corner for a lot of my career. It's fine, but he is now something way more than that to all of us.
Yes.
And I assume that the Twitter reaction, I saw some of the Twitter reaction was like, don't do it. Reconsider. Read some literature on the subject. But I mean, it's his life. He can do what he want with it. If he's been cleared to do it, then like, as it's all been explained to us, it's like a fluke occurrence. He got hit in just the right spot. That's not likely to happen again. But also, I know football players can put all this stuff out of their mind. I mean, fuck, I was one. You can put it all out of your mind, the dangers, and continue to play. But not if it actually happened to you. If you saw the pearly gates, you just gonna walk back out there and do it again? I don't got that type of mental strength.
No,
I can't do it no more.
You also got options.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, like, that's the options thing. Like, I look at that. If you have focused your whole life on doing this one thing, and we see this happen all the time with former players. Like, so what do I do now? But what happens in the what do I do now is when you're at like 22 and you've been, I don't think any of these cats is treating their money like, hey, man, I got 3 good years. No, they're like, I'm here, baby. Let's make it work. Like, I'll start stacking if I get that extension. Right. Yeah. But here, so I just, yeah, it's, I remember when he woke up in the hospital and his first question was, did we win? And the NFL media was so celebratory of that. And I was like, oh, that's terrifying.
You and me were on the same page with that one, man. That's like, and I try not to be judgmental of that sort of stuff because I guess I was like that at one point too. But I don't, if I was like that, I don't remember when. It was early in my career or something where it was like nothing else mattered. And we say that. I mean, even the guy who you think is the most team guy, most passionate player that you believe in, I don't know who he is, he says that nothing's more important than winning, he's lying. Because he's a human being. There are things that are more important than winning because he's normal. I can't imagine actually. And I guess DeMar Hamlin probably woke up. He was feeling fine. It wasn't like, yeah, only thing that matters, we win. But that's how the story got played. And it's like, he's such an intense competitor. Right. Let's celebrate this. If the hierarchy of needs in your life and football is the number one thing, that ain't okay. That's not to be celebrated.
Well, also to be fair to him, I believe that he thought it was still Monday night. You know what I mean? He think he just, he doesn't know, at least as far as I could tell. Like, they said he checked out on the field. So he didn't know what was going on. So as far as he knows, he just had this thing happen. And he's like, oh, snap, so we win?
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't know it's 5 days later.
He was not conscious when they was doing chest compressions.
Right.
And cutting his shoulder pads off and unscrewing his face mask. All that. He was not conscious. He woke up in the hospital bed. And was like, oh, so last thing I remember was going in for a tackle. What happened after that?
Yo, what if somebody's idea was, hey, I don't think we should tell them what happened. Right? Like, if you could hide the news from him just a little while so he never got a chance to go read about it. Like, no. Just tell him he just blacked out.
I mean, I don't think it would matter, honestly, because he still want to play. Or at least it seems like he still wants to play. I don't know. I'm rooting for him. I hope that it becomes the feel-good story that we all want it to be, but it just makes me incredibly nervous. And I'm shocked that the NFL ain't find some doctors to tell him no. They need to send some other doctors because the risk ain't worth the reward for them.
Yeah.
You know, like having this story drummed up again and talked about again ain't worth it to them. Having the chance of something bad happening to him again, it ain't worth it to them. And they need to give this man a big stack of money. And tell him to go somewhere.
Have you seen these reports that the Texans are like, no, we're not going to take a quarterback at number two because their plan is that they figure they can get Will Levis later. And so they're going to go ahead and do that. And of course, there's always a measure of gamesmanship that takes place at this point in the draft. And I may be wrong about this, but I feel like if your argument about your quarterback of the future is, nah, we can get him here. Are you sure that dude is good enough for you to hang your hopes on?
I think my feeling about that is it's either really dumb or really smart. It's nowhere in between. Like, it's not a little dumb. It's not a little smart. Because if this comes from a place of humility, not we can get our guy later, it's that we don't actually know because none of us actually know. And the more important thing is to build a roster that's ready to nurture a young quarterback than wasting a top pick when it's not a guy that we just feel like is, I don't know, Andrew Luck is the example that comes to mind, or Trevor Lawrence. Then, that's probably the smart thing to do, is not reach for the quarterback. How many times has reaching for a quarterback actually panned out? It doesn't really work out because these desperate teams are not overturned by just one player. So, like, if that's the reason behind it, I'm with you. But if you're like, if you're watching the film and you're like, man, we really like Will Levis, but nobody else do, let's get him later, that's just dumb.
Yeah, see, that's my, I remember that draft where Dwayne Haskins, rest in peace, fell to 16. And we had all had the how could you take Daniel Jones over Dwayne Haskins discussion, which, by the way, at the time, did feel like a perfectly legitimate thing to say, still in some ways did. Like, I looked at the Dwayne Haskins high school clips once because I was just trying to figure out, and I was like, oh my God, this dude looks like an NFL quarterback right now. And Daniel Jones, I mean, just because they gave him the money don't mean I think that he was good for six, but I appreciated the Giants for the fact of, if you think he's your guy, then you take him at six, right? Yeah. Like, that's where you go. And so with Levis, I feel like him is the same Kenny Pickett situation where that's a guy you get at 20. Like, maybe, like, I'd rather take a quarterback in the second round than take one in the middle of the first. Like, I just feel like if nobody else wants it. And with Levis, hey, man, I'm just begging to get aggregated right now, but whatever. You and I both know a lot about this world. You and I both know a lot about the NFL. It's four quarterbacks that we talking about in the first round. Just about everybody thinks that Will Levis is number four of four. I lived in a world where they put Cam Newton, Jake Locker, and Blaine Gabbert on the cover of Sports Illustrated and said, the toughest decision. Okay? If ain't nobody try to say that Will Levis is better than any of them, then I feel very confident that Will Levis is not better than any of them. We are not yet in the level of progress where if everybody want to take all the black dudes, even the one that can't shoot straight, then this dude, this dude right here,
the Anthony
probably
Richardson
just
one,
ain't
man.
That good.
Yeah, the fact that they have not built up some narrative about trust and comfort and reliability is why you take Will Levis over Anthony Richardson. Like, people ain't even doing that.
Nope.
Then I get you. They just like, yeah. Now, I mean, if Will there, you scoop him up. I mean, I get your point about the first and second round. The one difference is the fifth year option is,
yes,
like, that's why. Yeah.
Well, that's why, but, like, for example, I understood the Ravens going to get Lamar at 32 specifically for that. And who, look what that got us.
And now they don't know what they're doing. That's, did you, yeah, you did talk about the Jalen contract and,
good for, I forgot. We didn't actually go deep about that. Like, good for him.
Yeah.
Two, that's about to go on rate for that guy. Mm-hmm. And three, I feel like this is this contract and Burrow and or Herbert will get us closer to a Lamar resolution because the market is not going to be nearly as free form. And now who knows? Maybe Lamar's like, I'm better than Joe Burrow. Pay me more than Joe Burrow. But I still think that this helps things make more sense.
It does. If Lamar is going to react to it. That's the thing is, like, I get that it changes the environment, it changes the water that Lamar's swimming in. But if he don't care, he don't care. And he still realizes that the Ravens don't have a quarterback. I'm their quarterback. So I don't care what anybody else is signing for. And only way it impacts Lamar is if he cares about the public pressure. And we've gotten no indication that he does. Because the public's going to turn on him if it hasn't already. Once Jalen signed, and there's enough quarterbacks have signed, and Jalen's a great young quarterback. Whereas before you could say Russell and Kyler, like those signings, Lamar is like, that don't got nothing to do with me. They not in my class. Jalen's in your class. And so that's what I mean. Once we get closer to it, people are going to say, well, Lamar, it's not happening. This is what these guys took. You need to take it also. And that matters if Lamar gives a damn about the people saying that. And I don't know that he does. And again, this goes back to the not having an agent point. An agent would care. An agent would be like, hey, let's go ahead and I'm going to be the mediator over here. Let's go ahead and settle us up. When there ain't no mediator, yeah, get sticky.
Yeah, like, look, you're not going to get this, right? Yeah. Like, that's part of the agent. I remember once I was negotiating a contract with ESPN. It's the first contract I'd ever negotiated. And some woman who worked at the company at the time told me what somebody else made. And it was far more than I ever thought that I, in fact, I remember the number was $120,000. And this was the year 2006. So I'm 25, 26 years old when this is going on. And so now that's what I think I'm getting. I ultimately got $55,000, just to be clear. But I remember I talked to Bill Simmons about it at the time. And the example he gave me was great. He said, well, just because some team was dumb enough to give the Nate $50 billion doesn't mean they got to give you $50 billion.
Right.
And I'm like, fair. Fair. Totally get it. And that's the problem with Lamar is Lamar has set the line that he thinks is appropriate according to an incredibly rash decision that nobody else would have made.
Right. Yeah.
Because say what you want. It ain't even just about they not doing the full guaranteed part of it. They're not trying to guarantee nearly as much money on any of these other deals. They're just like, yo, he good for him. He got the Willy Wonka golden ticket. You better enjoy this chocolate.
It's a lot of chocolate, too. I mean, if the reports are true, which I don't know, that they offered him something similar to what Jalen got. It's like, man, that's that. Forget the public pressure. It's going to be hard. If that contract is on the table, it's going to be hard to leave 177 guaranteed on the table.
The problem is he's better than Jalen Hurts.
I agree. However,
that's to in line with what you were talking about before. Yeah. How much he's affected by it. He's like, all right, cool. So 200 did. Because, man, can you imagine if it was Lamar Jackson and all them AJ Brown, Devontae Smith.
Lamar. And it's like, Jalen was a bad pocket passer, and now he's a good pocket passer. And the concepts that they're running there are not overly complex. This is something that Lamar could do, but they made a decision to lean in on like running this kind of old school offense around Lamar's running ability, which you can build a more modern offense around his running ability. And that will require you to get some modern receivers and actually spread out, which like the thing I understand is you want to have bigger formations because you end up with bigger guys on the field who can't run with Lamar. But I don't understand why you don't spread teams out with Lamar, because that gives like more lanes for him, more opportunities for receivers. But who am I? I don't know nothing. I just talk about things into a microphone. Yeah,
I would think just like, how do we encourage these teams to play as much man coverage as possible?
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, that's what it's got to be. How do we get guys to turn their backs to RPO. The line of scrimmage?
RPO, like the RPO game, I think forces people into man coverage, because the point of the RPO game is to put zone defenders in conflicts, run past conflicts, and make them decide. And so, like, it's really hard to stop any RPO offense when you are in a zone situation, because like the curl flat defender is also responsible for a run gap. So we got to play man, because then in man you don't have to read the RPO. You're just like, all right, this is my man. I'm going where he go. If he blocks me, then I'll shed the block, make the tackle. If he run a route, I'm going to guard him. And then you end up with Lamar with everybody with their back turned. Then he got a decision to make. Do I score running the ball or do I throw it?
This is the thing I was thinking about with the Texans. If the plan for them is, cool, we'll just take Will Anderson, I'm not, you know, I ain't a super draft expert, but I ain't there. Like, Will Anderson is not Nick Bosa. Will Anderson is not Chase Young. Like, I know enough to know that boy plays high.
Yeah.
Like, his base is high. Like, that one, that could be a bad idea.
You got to trade back. Like, when there are four quarterbacks in the draft and you got a top five pick, you got to trade back or get one of them quarterbacks. There's no other, like, I mean, unless there's somebody like Micah who slipped to, what, like 12?
Yeah.
In his draft? Unless there's somebody like that, I guess Von Miller is a better example, a player who you just know is going to be like one of them tackles that you just like, no, you know what? My quarterback is not going to have to worry about his blind side. If not, you got to move back, because that pick is too valuable for you to walk out with somebody who you like, who you think is a perennial starter, but not a perennial Pro Bowler. Not a future Hall of Famer, because I think you can build a championship roster. Even if you don't have a great quarterback, you can build a competitive roster around a future Hall of Famer on a rookie contract, which the Broncos went and won a Super Bowl because they had Von Miller on a rookie contract, not because they had Peyton Manning out there throwing them things.
Look, man, I feel like, especially with those edge rushers, that for me is an outright jump off the screen position. Did you see the story about the dude, the Aaron Donald, like, light version that Pitt has coming out? Kalijah something, I can't remember what his last name is, but he's another one of these, like, 6'1", 280-pound defensive tackles out of Pitt that's looking to go in the first round, and he didn't take no visits.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, that's the hero we need right there. Like, I've really stopped and thought about this. What is the purpose of going on like, maybe you try to talk these teams into taking you, but all these trips don't serve you?
They don't.
You got to go wherever they say.
Yeah, they don't serve you. I mean, you don't feel like you have the leverage to reject them, though, is the thing that it comes down to. But you need everyone to be like, nah, because you know what the stories when people reject those things come out is, or the opinions are, that he's not going to be compliant, which is more important than talent in some buildings, is compliance. And yeah, I guess I'm with you. Like, they don't learn anything. It doesn't help you at all. I mean, I guess you go visit the city, see if you want to live there, but it ain't up to you.
Right. As I was saying, we can just talk about this on Zoom. Like, I don't need to take a tour of the facility. Like, whatever this facility is, I'ma just be here. Got it. Like, you know, right. It's the leverage thing. You're like, oh man, if we do this, we're going to keep falling and nobody's going to take me. And that does apply to probably 250 of the guys in the draft. Mm-hmm. But if I'm at the top, I ain't going nowhere. Like, either you gonna do this or you not. Like, Take a Nick Bosa, for example.
Right.
Nick Bosa, there wasn't nothing he could do where San Francisco wasn't going to take him number two. Why? Because they weren't stupid. Now, were they stupid enough to take Solomon Thomas instead of Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes? Perhaps. But that shows you they not so stupid they going to pass up on Nick Bosa because they took Solomon Thomas.
That I mean, but also, I think it's probably pretty cool. Like, I remember the visits I went on. It was like kind of, you've been dreaming about being in the NFL your whole life. And the Tennessee Titans want me to come to their facility. I sat down and did a psych eval. And the psychologist was like, this is the best eval we've ever done, blah, blah, blah. I can't wait to talk to coach about it. I was feeling good. First round come around, you know who they drafted? Pac-Man Jones.
They did.
Yeah, so like, clearly, no disrespect to Pac-Man, it is quite clear to me that the psych eval had no bearing on the on the player that they was getting. They was looking for a dog.
Yo,
and they got a dog.
I'll never forget this. By the way, the thing about Pac-Man that people need to get is that the psych eval was probably fairly adventurous, but he's one of those really smart dudes.
Yeah.
Like, the biggest problem with Pac-Man is that he was smart enough to rationalize. But like, the people I know who know Pac-Man from Atlanta have great jobs, and they know him from school, you know? But I'll never forget, we had heard all the stuff about Pac-Man going into that draft. And then they did the shot where they go to Pac-Man's house and they show Pac-Man and his family. And he had a piece on about this big, all diamonds of a Pac-Man. And I was like, uh-oh.
He came to the rookie symposium. So the rookie symposium is like a 3-day event where they try to teach you all the stuff about being a professional athlete. Like, don't go here. Don't do that. Don't get in trouble. This is how you spend your money, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, we all just fly in there and we wear our sweatpants. Pac-Man showed up in the sweats like everybody else. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of jewelry he had on his neck, but he wore that thing to the symposium and sat right down. He stood out. It was clear that he was here for a different reason than the rest of y'all. And you should be grateful that he even showed up. But yeah, your assessment about Pac-Man being a smart guy is true from everything I've heard also. Like, I don't mean no disrespect to him, but yeah, I can't imagine that if you was concerned about character, as they say that's what they were looking for.
Yes.
Pac-Man did not have the history that would allow you to breathe easy, but he could ball.
I also want to point out that Pac-Man Jones, first of all, he played corner well into his 30s. No matter how many years he took off in between, it's crazy. That man also had 96 straight punt returns without a fair catch. That is the most, do you need to know who we are talking about here? That man went 8 years without calling for, he ain't scared.
It just hit me. They did the psych eval, and to the psychologist, I passed the psych eval.
Yes.
To the football coaches. Pac-Man was the dude that they wanted, and boy, were they right.
Dog, again, 8 years without being like, nah, this looked like a bad idea. Nope. That's not how Pac-Man.
Man, I returned punts in high school. When I got to college, they was like, go over there. That's where the punt returners go. I was like, before you even punt the ball, that seems like a bad idea. Every punt return seemed like a bad idea to me.
Yes.
No punt return seemed like a bad idea to Pac-Man.
He stretched it out. It's actually a fascinating story. Now he's taking care of Chris Henry's kid. I don't know if you've seen that, which is actually like real heartwarming. Because, God, I have so many Pac-Man stories that I cannot tell here. They are all just, wow. He's a nature versus nurture discussion. Like, if Pac-Man Jones grew up in my house, some things are the same, but some things are different. However, if I grew up in Pac-Man Jones's house over there on Boat Rock, I don't make it out. And not because I go to the penitentiary, because I'm never coming outside.
Me either. You and me both.
Oh, man, but that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out on GetUp. Check him out on Anscape. Check him out on Debatable. And, of course, check out the Dominique Foxworth Show, available wherever you are listening to this podcast. My man, I appreciate you.
Appreciate it. Yeah, this week on the show, I had some bars for Stephen A. He came from my hairline, like, of all people.
He did.
It was a bad camera angle.
It's not your hairline. You do, and I look at your older clips, too. you have, it's not that you got a hairline situation. You do have a lot of forehead.
Yeah, got a lot. It's fine. It works. It's not time to give up, though, because when he had called me out, my first response was like, man, is it time to come on home, as Bomani would say? But no, I think I got a couple of years left in me.
Now, Stephen A. would come home, except honestly, ain't everybody's head built for that?
Yeah.
Like, he would look like Jiminy Cricket if he came home. Like, if you could just take a look at it, like, the way the shape goes, and he kind of, like, the head ain't that big, but he come out in the chest, you know? And, like, it wouldn't quite go, he wouldn't quite be in the Ninja Turtle category. That's them dudes that got, like, you know the Ninja Turtles, right? The dudes that go clean, the dudes that go clean shaving, and they take, and they look like Ninja Turtles, right? He would not be in the Ninja Turtle space. Like, LeBron ain't got, he got that strawberry head. He ain't got the dome. That it's a little too big on top of it. So he got to try to fight and try to make it work. I got lucky. My dome was ready for this. You know what I'm saying? The Joneses was prepared. You could make it work.
Yeah, I think I could pull off the baldy. I mean, I was as short all my life. But yeah, your point about the forehead is fair. Because like from the side, I feel like it looked better.
You'll know when it's time to come home.
I got a year or two left. Yeah,
when Ashley tell you to bring your ass home. That is the arbiter of whether or not you need to come home. But
All right,
did that run through. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Remember, call the voicemail line, 860-516-4119. Thinking about Dylan Brooks, tell us about the time that you've seen somebody talk a little too much smack and pick up and what happened. Bonus points if it's actually your story. Don't hide. You knew you had it coming. 860-516-4119. That is the telephone number. Adi Kyle, Parker Owens, and Dan Stastic handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.